welcome His Excellency the Ambassador of Iraq, of the Republic of Iraq, Ambassador Dr. Hisham Al-Alawi, and Ms. Tura, who is an attaché. Are you a military attaché?
Diplomatic
attaché, okay. You're welcome, really, in Cape Town, in the National Parliament of South Africa. We are a committee responsible for economic development, the oversight of the Department of Economic Development. You know, we established as per the constitution, and we follow the rules and procedures of Parliament. Obviously, we act in the space, actually, that is normally the speaker space. We represent him whenever we interact, whether with locals or foreign people or stakeholders. Before we continue, because we are here, even though we are hosting, but we were invited. Before we continue, I would want to introduce the members of the committee, starting with myself, of course. My name is Matulare Coleman. I'm the chairperson of the portfolio committee. We also have, I'll start from the far end there, is Mr. Mubu, who is a member of the committee representing the Democratic Alliance in the committee. We have Madam Mfan Mhorosi, representing the African National Congress in the committee. And then we have a young gentleman there, Mr. Hlengwa, who is the member representing Inkatha Freedom Party. Next to him, we have that lady there, Mrs. Sodisi, representing the African National Congress in the committee. And then we have the whip of the committee, that's Mr. Ntuli, of course, representing the African National Congress too. And then we also have our support staff. Next to me here is our researcher, our content advisor, Ms. Mabaso. And then we have committee assistant, Amanda, and then my personal assistant, Ms. Williams. I guess they know you. They've been interacting with you a lot. Very familiar, yeah. Yeah, that is the team. We have other members. Some will be joining, some will not be joining. But we have about 12 members of the committee, all in all. We just want to appreciate the fact that you have seen it important that you brief the committee on the happenings in Iraq, and also the interest you have with the cooperation between the two countries. Obviously, we're dealing with economic development matters, and following events in Iraq, we also do have an understanding of what's happening in the country, but it's a hearsay. We feel very honored that today we're going to hear from Your Excellency that as to what exactly is happening. We know you're one of the richest countries in the world, and I think South Africa is quite privileged to have cooperation and diplomatic relations with the country like yours. We're not going to say much. We're going to give you the platform because this is your meeting, if I were to put it that way. We're going to give you the most of the time, as we had requested, because at 10 o'clock we have our caucus meetings. Would want to end the meeting exactly 9:45. May I, without any further ado, hand over to Your Excellency.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson of the PC on Economic Development. Thank you also for the Honourable Members of the PC on Economic Development for this opportunity to meet with you and to update you on the situation in Iraq, but also more importantly on our efforts to enhance relations between the two countries that have many things in common. As you know very well, both Iraq and South Africa are very rich countries, rich with their histories, rich with their natural and human resources, and are important countries within their regions and the continent. Both countries have also been through difficulties, in your case because of the policies of the apartheid regime, in our case because of dictatorship, wrong policies, wars, sanctions, and occupation followed by the terrorist activities that Iraq and the Iraqis have suffered from in the past decade. As you also indicated, Iraq historically played an active role in establishing the oldest human civilizations. It's not without basis they say Iraq was the cradle of civilizations, because in the old Mesopotamia, nearly 10,000 years ago, all the major civilizations were established: Sumer, Ur, Babylonia, Assyria, and so on. Despite the rich history and the rich natural resources and human resources, because of the factors that I mentioned, major aspects of life in Iraq have suffered a lot from the early 80s onward, because of the first war with Iran that lasted 8 years, followed by the disaster of invasion of Kuwait in 1990, which was followed by very tough economic sanctions from 91 to 2013, during which all the key aspects of life and the key sectors in Iraq have declined. In 2003, as you know, the American invasion happened, and regardless of the controversy about the decision, unfortunately it was also followed by many mistakes and then triggered terrorist activities and influx of extremists to Iraq. And despite the positive developments in the past few years, we continue to have major challenges because of the above factors. I'm glad to report that despite the difficulties we've had in the past decade, Iraq is now on the right path to establish a stable, prosperous democracy. We have our new constitution that has many similarities with the South African constitution that was approved by the majority of the Iraqis in October 2005. On the basis of this new constitution, we had several elections, major general elections as well as provincial elections, that resulted in broadly representative parliaments. And on both occasions, in 2005 and 2010, the parliaments appointed national unity governments representing the key blocs and parties in the parliament, and the governments and the parliaments have been working together to try and address some of the challenges that we have in Iraq, which are more or less similar to the challenges that you face here in South Africa. It's interesting to highlight that the top five priorities of your government are exactly the same as the top five priorities of the Iraqi government, i.e. to improve healthcare, education, provide jobs and reduce poverty and unemployment, as well as improving services, particularly to rural areas, and improve law and order. The relations between the two countries started at the end of the 90s. Both countries signed the MOU of establishing diplomatic relations in 1998. We had our embassy opened in 1999, and we had our first ambassador in South Africa at the end of 2000. Most of the time, the Iraqi embassy was led by a relatively junior diplomat. I am the third ambassador to South Africa. I came to South Africa in April 2011. I've been here for over 2 years now. The last 2 years have been very dynamic, very rewarding. We've been very proactive. We have engaged with various national departments. We've engaged with the parliament and various committees of the parliament. We have been to most of your provinces. So far, I have visited 7 of your 9 provinces, some of them several times. In addition to engaging with the universities, with the think tanks, the communities, the NGOs, and all the visits and the interactions we've had confirmed our impression that the two countries and the population, the nations, two nations, have many things in common. And there are great opportunities for working together to enhance relations between the two countries and the friendly nations for the benefits of both countries. When I started in April 2011, because of what happened in 2003, because South Africa so far doesn't have an embassy in Iraq, you don't have a physical presence on the ground, and without having a physical presence, without high-ranking officials visit, as you know, things will move rather slowly. So we have to almost start from scratch, despite the many similarities between the two countries and the great opportunities that are there. So we had to work on preparing the grounds for some agreements to be signed. And I'm glad to report that the first and most important agreement that we've managed to sign was the Agreement on Economic and Technical Cooperation. Our Minister of Trade was here in November last year. He had a good bilateral meeting with His Excellency Dr. Davis, the DTI Minister. And both countries have signed the agreement, which in my view will be a good platform to build on and to move faster with enhancing relations between the two countries. The specific agreement that I referred to has mentioned 12 key sectors to focus on, and they represent almost all the important sectors that we could think of, including energy, electricity production, agriculture, forestry, housing, transportation, tourism, healthcare, telecommunications. So all the major sectors have been mentioned. And I think there are opportunities in all the above sectors that when it comes to enhancing operation for the benefits of the two countries and the two nations. Within the agreement, there has been a specific mention of few specific steps, practical steps, in order to increase bilateral trade and enhance economic cooperation between the two countries. Obviously, one is to establish a committee chaired by the relevant ministers that will have regular meetings alternating between Iraq and here. We are expecting a visit by His Excellency Dr. Davis to Iraq sometime in the near future, hopefully. There was also agreement that the two departments, ministries, will work together to enable South African companies and the department to participate in the Baghdad International Fair, which is scheduled for the 10th to 20th of October this year. We are currently working with our colleagues at the DTI to prepare the grounds for an advance team to go to Iraq, hopefully next week, and directly engage with the Ministry of Trade, but also with other relevant ministries, including the Ministry of Industry and Mining, Oil, as well as the Iraqi Federation of Chambers of Commerce, and the Iraqi National Investment Commission. In addition to that, the agreement has specifically mentioned the need to agree on a working plan on an annual basis to put in place the necessary elements in order to implement the agreement. In the past 5 years or so, the level of trade between the two countries has been fluctuating and is certainly far below the potential and the level that we want to see. And as I said, the agreement would definitely help us to move in this direction. In terms of the Iraqi economy, I'm glad to report that despite all the difficulties we've had in the past decade or so, the Iraqi economy has been one of the top 10 fastest growing economies in the past few years, with an average economic growth rate of around 8 to 10% in the past few years. The forecast for the next decade is also very positive. The figures released by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank suggest that we will continue to have an average economic growth rate of 9 to 10%, which in this current negative financial environment, as you know, is very positive. As a sign that the new system, socio-political system that we are trying to build in Iraq, is using the available resources in a better way to serve people and achieve the priorities of the government, our rates of unemployment and poverty have gone down significantly in the past few years. We started with a very high rate of unemployment and poverty in 2003 because of the factors that I mentioned. Unemployment rate was around 40% in 2003. Poverty rate was in excess of 50%. The most recent figures released by our Ministry of Planning and International Cooperation suggest that the unemployment rate has gone down to 11%, which is, as you know, a remarkable achievement. Poverty rate has gone down to around 17%, and there is a new strategy that was announced a couple of months ago, a very ambitious one that aims to reduce unemployment poverty further to less than 10% in the next 5 years. We feel very optimistic about achieving that, given our success and our rich resources. Most of the economic development happened in Iraq because of the development in our energy sector. Iraq, as you know, has been identified as a country with the second or third largest oil reserve. We have a proven reserve of over 140 billion barrels. This is likely to be increased in the next decade with the current exploration activities to over 200 billion barrels. Our production capacity has increased significantly in the past 3 years. In 2003, we gave 12 big contracts to international companies to help develop our oil fields. We gave them what we call a service contract. We agreed with them that they would come and help us to increase our production capacity, and they will get on average $2 to $6 per extra barrel of oil that they help us to produce. And that has worked very well. We started with a production capacity of less than 2 million barrels per day in 2009, and this year we have exceeded 3 million barrels per day, and the forecast for the next few years suggests that we will reach a production rate of around 6 million barrels per day, and in the next decade or two, Iraq has been identified as the only country in the world that has the potential to increase its production capacity by over 5 million barrels per day, which will make us country number one or two in terms of production and export capacity. We have, in parallel with increasing our production capacity, we have also been working on increasing our export capacity. We have been building new port terminals specifically for oil exportation. We have been working on linking the northern pipelines with the southern one. There are a couple of new projects, very ambitious, to also link Iraq via Jordan or Syria to the Red Sea and Mediterranean, and from there to the rest of the world. And these projects will help to significantly increase our not only production capacity but also export capacity. Iraq has been identified as the most important country when it comes to the stability of the energy market and the providing the security that is needed when it comes to consistent, reliable production and export of crude oil. There are also very ambitious plans to develop our gas industry. Iraq is currently identified as the 10th or 11th in terms of proven reserve, gas reserve. And this might also change. We are expected to move maybe to number 5 with the current exploration activities that will significantly increase our proven reserve and production and export capacity. We expect to reach a production capacity of gas that will meet our domestic demand in the next years, and it has been indicated that maybe after 5 years or so we will reach a production capacity whereby we could also export gas. We have several challenges when it comes to moving forward with our plans for further economic development. The first one is diversification. We need to spend some of the revenues we get from exporting crude oil on other key sectors, including industries, agriculture, tourism, and the government has been doing so. As you know, it's a long process. We need to continue with our efforts along these lines. The other challenge that is facing our economy is to stimulate more growth of the private sector. So far, the contribution made by the private sector when it comes to job creation and reducing unemployment, poverty, has been less than the contribution made by the public and government sectors. And we need to encourage more growth of the private sector so that we could also help them to achieve our very ambitious targets of reducing unemployment, poverty further to less than 10%. In terms of the other sectors, the government has been investing a lot on education. Historically, Iraq did have one of the best education systems in the region and the world. Education has been completely free up to postgraduate level, continues to be so. We have a mixture of private and government institutions. Most of the students would prefer to go to a government institution, not because it's free, but also because the standards are generally better. As a sign that this new system is very committed to improving education and provide the Iraqi institutions with the expertise that we need, in 2009, our Prime Minister announced a very ambitious project to send up to 10,000 of our best graduates to internationally recognized universities to get their masters and PhDs. In the past 3 years, over 3,000 Iraqis has been selected by a specialist committee, and they have been given the opportunity to go and get their PhDs and masters. The Iraqi education system is based on the British education system, has many similarities to your system here in South Africa, and the average Iraqi graduate would prefer to go to an English-speaking country or to a university where English is the key language of education and research. And because of that, most of our graduates have chosen to go to UK, US, Australia, Canada. We have been working over the past 2 years through our engagement with your universities, and you, as you know, you have some of the best universities in Africa and the world, to prepare the ground so that some of our students, rather than all of them going to the countries that I mentioned, some of them would choose and come to South Africa and do their masters and PhDs here in South Africa. This has many advantages, not only for the students, but also it would help to strengthen relations between the two countries and help us to have enough experts on South Africa and the continent in general. We do hope to see some of the students coming here sometimes in the near future. We are currently working with the universities, with the Department of Higher Education and Training, and expect an Iraqi delegation representing our Ministry of Higher Education, Scientific Research, and the Iraqi universities to come to South Africa before the end of this year. And I think that will be a good step forward. We're also working on preparing an agreement on cooperation in this field, higher education, training, and research, which will be a good platform similar to the agreement we had on economic and technical cooperation. Just give you an idea about the other important sectors that we have been thinking about, we are currently working with the Department of Energy to sign a similar agreement. We have been working on with our colleagues at the department, at PetroSA, at the Central Energy Fund, Strategic Fuel Fund, and Senedi, because both sides agree that there is a great potential for cooperation at the energy sector. We are preparing the grounds currently for a special team from the Department of Energy plus the other stakeholders and institutions that I mentioned to go and visit Iraq and directly engage with our colleagues and also discuss the possibility of signing an agreement on cooperation in the energy sector. We have been also working on removing some of the barriers when it comes to Iraq exporting crude oil to South Africa. I think this is important, not only because Iraq has increased its production capacity and export capacity, but historically we have provided South Africa with crude oil. The qualities of the Iraqi crude are very suitable to your refineries, and it makes sense to think about importing crude from Iraq. We have been also working with our colleagues at the Department of Defense. We have visited Denel, Mecham as well. And we have identified that there is a good potential there for cooperation along these lines. I will be having a meeting with the Honorable Chairperson and members of the PC on Defense later on today at 10 o'clock. And I think that would help to move things faster as well. There are other sectors that we have been also thinking about. Tourism is an important sector. When we take into account the our rich history, cultural size, the religious size, and the number of visitors that are currently going, and the potential for the increase in tourism in Iraq, together with the positive picture that the Iraqis have about South Africa and the desire there to come and visit South Africa, it helped us to understand how important the potential of the tourism sector is. So we've been also discussing the potential for signing an agreement on cooperation in this field. We would like to benefit from your experience when it comes to expanding our infrastructure, tourism infrastructure, as well as training enough staff to serve in these institutions. We have been discussing the possibility of cooperation with other departments, including arts and culture, agriculture, transportation especially. We would like to benefit from your experience when it comes to building and running seaports, as well as free trade and industrial zones, which are important. I've been to several of your ports in KZN, in Eastern Cape. We plan to visit Savannah Bay here, the Western Cape as well. there is a special interest back home to benefit from the experience in South Africa and share experience with South Africa when it comes to the transportation sector. The telecommunication sector is another important sector. There has been a massive expansion in the number of mobile users in Iraq. In 2003, there were no services. We currently have over 15 million subscribers, and there is a great potential for expansion there. And I know that MTN has an important presence in Iran, as well as some other African countries, and this is an area that we are also keen on encouraging cooperation in this sector. The list is long. Healthcare is another sector. We've been to quite a few of your hospitals, teaching hospitals. I've engaged with the medical schools, universities, I've engaged with some of the MECs, and we all agree that there is a great potential there for cooperation. Currently, we are working on preparing the grounds for signing some agreements and MOUs on cooperation in this field. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, to summarize, the last couple of years in South Africa have taught me that we have many things in common. We more or less face similar challenges. Our governments have similar priorities, and there is a great potential for working together and for enhancing cooperation between our two countries for the benefits of our nations. We look forward to working with all of you. We also look forward to having the necessary support from the committee to move forward, move faster with enhancing relations. In addition to the meetings, the visits, high-ranking visits, the signing of the agreement, the practical steps for implementation, I strongly believe that we also need to move faster with opening the South African embassy in Iraq. I think without a physical presence on the ground, it would be difficult to move as fast as we would like to see when it comes to enhancing the relations. I do hope that this meeting we have today will be the beginning of a good long-term relationship between the embassy and the committee, and through you with the parliament. And we thank you again for the opportunity to have this meeting today. I'm at your disposal if you have any questions, if you'd like to like me to expand on some of the areas that we touched upon. Please feel free to do so. Thank you again.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency. I think this was quite a mouthful. I think we are more wiser in terms of understanding the situation in Iraq, and also you also helped in clarifying and making us understand the areas of cooperation you're working on. That was quite informative. We really appreciate that. And I know that members are really dying to have even much more deeper understanding of certain issues that you've raised. May we then interact? This is our meeting between ourselves and His Excellency, the Ambassador Dr. Hisham Al-Alawi. May we introduce about two members who were not present when we made introductions. May I start with the gentleman in a red tie?
Thank you.
Is Mr. Justice? No, Mr. Dring? No. I'm starting with Mr. Mabasa, who is a member representing the African National Congress in the committee. And the gentleman that wanted to talk now is Mr. Thring, who is representing the ACDP, sorry. Yes. He is one of our new members here in the committee. Yes. Without then further waste of time, may we allow for questions, comments? May I start with you, Mr. Thring, followed by Mr. Mobu, Meso Tetsi, Babu Shengwa, and then Babu Untul, in that order, please, and you, Babu Mabasa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wanting to assist because I know sometimes people, when I'm new, struggle with the pronunciation of my surname, but you did really well in pronouncing it. Thank you. Secondly, apologies for being late. Let me just stop there. Three questions maybe to the Ambassador. Firstly, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate in South Africa the interaction that we have with your country, understanding the history that that Iraq has very similar to the history that South Africa has had, and we certainly are hoping and praying that the challenges that you've had in the past will be put behind you. The Middle East is an area known for its tension. Maybe if you could just expand on Iraq's policy with regards to the tension within the Middle East, and how you see that panning out, because the Middle East somehow draws almost the whole world into it, including South Africa. I think the second question would be with regards to MTN. We are glad to see the end of all of the newspaper articles where there were lots of accusations from MTN side, well, against MTN as well as against the officials out in Iraq. But it has certainly contributed to the growth. If one looks at the stock market and the current growth in MTN's share value, it seems as if all of those difficulties are behind us. So maybe if you could just comment on that. And then maybe the third question, when I came in I heard you mentioning that there is a kind of a dialogue or a relationship with regards to the transport sector. Maybe if you could just expand on that for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tren. Who's next, Mr. Mugu?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Ambassador, for the presentation. We also have had an opportunity to read through some of the preparatory documents that were prepared for us as a briefing, so that we can understand the situation in your country. But of course, like my colleague has said, many of us have been following what is going on in Iraq because of the importance of that country in terms of the geopolitical situation. But it's also impressive to see that you talk about an annual growth percentage of between 8 and 10, which is quite impressive under the circumstances. But my question would be, in an environment of so much violence, how can you sustain an economic growth of this rate? And how do Iraqis expect that it's going to be economic activity that's thriving and trade with other countries can thrive? Secondly, what do you think is the most effective way that Iraqis can deal with the sectarian conflict that's happening right now? Because we're realizing that foreign intervention has failed. Americans and the other forces went in, they pulled out, and have left it to your own devices, but that conflict too continues. How do you see Iraqis themselves coming up with a solution to their own problem, because foreign intervention has failed? Lastly, there appears to be very serious religious conflict, and particularly the suppression of minorities like Christians and other religious groupings that are not dominant. The religious intolerance, in other words. How do you hope that this is going to be avoided in the future? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Obviously, with that, the movement from 2003 to where you are now means there's a lot that you've done. Who's next? Babushan. Methodist, okay.
Thank you, Chair. Also, expressing the same sentiments of welcoming the exposure through the input of the ambassador. I would like to know about the status of women in as far as governance is concerned and the ownership of property. And in as far as the sectarian is concerned, to what extent does it impact on the distribution of resources, education in particular?
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a pity that I didn't really ask you, but if you feel these questions are enough for you to respond and then we can take another round, it's fine. Thank you. May we allow the His Excellency to respond and then the rest will follow after. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you to the members for their interest. I could obviously clearly see that you have done your homework very well, and the questions are very relevant and would definitely help us to understand the situation well and enrich this discussion. So I'm very grateful for all of you. Mr. Pring, as you rightly indicated, the Middle East is currently witnessing increasing tension, and there are multiple factors for that. If, for example, we take the crisis in Syria, unfortunately, as somebody who knows Syria very well, I've been to Syria several times before I came to South Africa, I'm very sad to see the level of destruction that has happened in the past 2.5 years or so. It's phenomenal, it's massive. In addition to that, we all know that the official figures, including the UN figures, have confirmed that there has been over 100,000 casualties over the past 2.5 years, plus a few millions of internally displaced and refugees, Syrian refugees, to neighboring countries, including Iraq. Over the past few days, there was an influx of large number of refugees from the Syrian Kurds to the northern part of Iraq. Over a few days, the UN has reported that there were over 30,000 Syrian refugees that crossed the borders. This is on the top of over 100,000 or so that we have received in Iraq over the past couple of years. There is no doubt that the approach that has been used and supported by some countries in the region, including Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, has not worked, and the figures that I just mentioned are just some indications of the failure of the above approach. We know very well from our history in Iraq and the recent experience in 2003 that using military intervention to force regime change has many negative consequences. When it comes to casualties, when it comes to displacement and refugees, when it comes to destruction of infrastructure. We have been trying to obviously raise awareness about the dangers of continuing with this approach. Last year we have hosted successfully the Arab League Summit in March, the end of March, and as the leader of the Arab League, we have been pushing for an alternative approach, focusing on media ceasefire, dialogue, bringing the relevant partners on board, agreeing on interim government, preparing the grounds for amending the constitution and then having elections away from the current approach. We also presented a similar package during the Nenaline movement that happened in Tehran in September last year. And we've been working with the Arab League and the UN envoy, Mr. Al-Ibrahimi, in order to support him with his attempt to find a peaceful solution for the crisis in Syria. I personally was bit optimistic earlier this year when U.S. administration and Russians started to talk about preparing grounds for Geneva 2. But I'm rather sad to see that things have not moved as fast as expected along these lines. Obviously, one of the possible reasons for the delay is because the rebels and those supporting them have lost some grounds in the past few months. They don't seem to be willing to go to the negotiating table without improving their position on the ground. And that's very sad, obviously, because each month the figures suggest that at least 5,000 Syrians are killed, and many more will be forced to move around and become refugees in addition to the destruction of infrastructure. When it comes to for example, the dispute on the nuclear issue, Iran nuclear issue, we have also tried to play an active role in pushing for a diplomatic solution for the dispute. Last year in May, we hosted the second round of negotiation between Iran, the permanent five, plus Germany, and we have been trying in various ways to bring the two parties together and push for a peaceful diplomatic solution. We believe that the election of the new president, Mr. Rouhani, with his good support inside Iran and with his new approach when it comes to foreign policy and improving his desire to improve relations with the countries at regional level, international level, we do hope that this will help to move along these lines. In terms of other conflicts in the region, if we take, for example, the important Palestinian-Israeli conflict, Iraq, as the other Arabic countries, as South Africa, have always supported the legitimate aspirations and rights of the Palestinians to have their own independent state, and to see an end for this tragedy and enable the Palestinians to live with dignity, and to see an end for the policies that have resulted in gross violations of their human rights. The recent progress in terms of moving the negotiation, peace negotiations, is welcome, but many observers are not that optimistic when it comes to achieving the desirable outcomes. I think they are rightly concerned that that it does seem to be more of a media show than the real negotiations and resulting in the desirable outcomes. In terms of what is going on in the other regions in the country, what some have called the Arab Spring, Libya, Tunisia, Egypt, Yemen, Bahrain, I think Iraq is in a good position to share experiences, as South Africa is, when it comes to democratic transformation, agreeing on a new constitution, building the new democratic institutions, working on national reconciliation, and addressing some of the challenges that those countries are suffering from. So we've been working through the Arab League and directly with some of the countries in order to encourage consensus on how to move forward when it comes to moving along the lines of democratic transformation, but also doing it in a constructive way without much violence or without destruction of infrastructure. As you know very well from your experience in South Africa and from Iraq and other experiences, democratic transformation and building a new socio-political system, especially in difficult environments, is a long process. It's a long and complex process. And you have to really think in terms of decades rather than months or years. So we do hope that the recent events will ultimately result in better system, governance systems that would use the available resources for the benefits of the nations of the relevant countries. I'll come to the question of sectarian tension because there was another question on national reconciliation in a few minutes. In terms of MTN, as I said, the telecommunication sector is an important sector in Iraq. There is a great potential there for expansion, although there has been a rapid expansion in the past decade in terms of subscribers and the services. Generally speaking, people are not that happy with the service they get at the moment, and definitely there is room for improvement. So one way of achieving that is to introduce a fourth license. Currently we have three major providers in Iraq, people are talking, they want better, more reliable service, and I think one way of achieving that is through a fourth license. And with your experience, with MTN experience in Iran, and their interest, they have been communicating in various ways with us to express their interest, there is obviously a potential there for them to contribute to improving and expanding the service in Iraq. And I would obviously encourage them to engage in various ways. We will be delighted to facilitate things and put them in touch and make it easier for them to visit and to engage with the stakeholders. In terms of the cooperation and the transportation sector, because of the economic growth, because of the increased activities along the other sectors, the transportation sector is very important in Iraq. There are plans to build new airports, new seaports, roads, metros, rail networks, so almost any areas you could think of. And with your experience and the success that you have achieved when it comes to expanding your roads, the ports, your success in also running them, when it comes also to establishing new business development centers, free industrial and trade centers. I've been to the Quecha, I've been to the Nubeh port in Durban, we've been to the Durban port itself as well. I'm waiting for opportunities, as I said, to go and visit Saldanha Bay and Richards Bay as well. And there has been, following the report that we've written, there has been a specific request to engage with South Africa at this level. We are in the process of preparing a detailed report about your experience when it comes to the transportation sector in the past two decades, and we are also preparing the grounds for a special delegation from our Ministry of Transportation to come and visit South Africa sometimes in the near future. There is also potential for training there, as you know. Our ministry is keen to send some of their staff and have some practical experience when it comes to running those facilities and expanding business and trade activities. In terms of moving on to the next group of questions, economic growth, achieving that level of growth and maintaining it versus the difficulties we've had with the security environment. Let me just give you some figures to help you understand better the security environment. When I was asked to come to South Africa in April 2011, I didn't have a chance to visit South Africa before. So I had to rely on what is available on the internet and satellite, TVs, media and so on, a few of the reports that we had from the mission here. And the picture was very bleak, as you know. I was so concerned about my safety and my family's safety. I thought something might happen from the airport to my residence. But when you come and visit the country and have a chance to go around and visit the various provinces and engage with people, you get the real picture. Obviously, there is concern, but it's not as bad as it's portrayed on media and satellite TVs. And this is also the case in Iraq. Obviously, media are mostly interested in negative news. as you know, unfortunately, roadside bombs and car bombs attract a lot of attention. But let me give you some specific figures. The worst years in Iraq were 2006-2007, when we had the peak of the tension, sectarian tension. In 2006-2007, a total of 17,000 Iraqis were killed, many of them obviously innocent civilians. And the figures started to improve from 2009 onward. Based on the Iraqi figures, the UN figures, and the British body count figures, the overall number of people killed in Iraq, this is civilians as well as police and soldiers, came down from the highest figures that we had in 2006-2007 to the lowest figure in 2011, whereby less than 3,000 Iraqis were killed in accidents in 2011. The figures from 2010-2012 were around 3,500-4,000 or so. So there has been a big improvement in the overall number of incidents and attacks. I think you are aware that we have seen recently some increased escalation in the number of attacks in Iraq. Unfortunately, most of the attacks, almost the overwhelming majority, target innocent people, target markets, worship places, mosques, churches, cafe and restaurants recently. And it's, as you know, it's very, very challenging to prevent that. Most of the recent increase in attacks and the escalation, we believe, is linked to the crisis in Syria. Unfortunately, there has been an influx of large number of extremists and terrorists from different parts of the world to Syria. And some countries in the region have supported them in various ways, finances, arms, weapons, and so on. And they have been working freely along the borders, crossing. They even announced what they call Dawlat al-Iraq al-Islamiyya fi Bilad al-Sham. They group Iraq with Levant and Syria. They look at both countries as one region. And with their access to more weapons, arms, and finances, they have been more able to do more attacks. I think the other reason, because they have lost a lot of grounds in Syria, and they are not happy about our neutral position. They wanted us to support them. So they are trying to, in a way, do something to express their anger with how things have evolved. As you know, fighting terrorism, it should be a regional. There should be some regional efforts to address that. And this is why we have talked about this during the Arab League Summit last year, and this year our Prime Minister talked extensively about the need for regional cooperation, but also at a wider level as well, with other countries in the region and our international friends and allies. So practically speaking, obviously, we need to continue with our efforts, but without also addressing some of the other challenges in the region, including an end for the crisis in Syria, it would be difficult to achieve the level of improvement that we wish to see. Moving on to the important issue of sectarian conflicts and national reconciliation efforts and minorities. Iraq is in a unique position to first understand the importance of these issues, but also to contribute towards a practical solution. The Iraqi society, as you know, is truly multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-religious, just like the South African society is. And we have always lived peacefully together. As a clear indication of that, the level of mixed marriages in Iraq is very high. It's over a quarter. So one in four marriages in Iraq are mixed marriages between Arab and Kurds and other ethnic groups, between Muslims and non-Muslims, between Shias and Sunnis. And this phenomena is a new phenomena. Largely it was encouraged by the former regime and the extremists and terrorists that worked on this. In the past few years, there has been a lot of efforts on strengthening national reconciliation as a sign that we look at the experience you had in South Africa with great importance. We have organized for two important delegations to come to South Africa in the past year. Last year we had a special delegation led by the Prime Minister's advisor on national reconciliation with representatives from various departments, Iraqi departments, as well as the UN that are working there in Iraq. They came and engaged with your relevant institutions, the Parliament, the NGOs, the various departments, and they found the experience very rich. Obviously, there are a lot of lessons that we could share with you. There are a lot of lessons we could learn from your experience, and we take this issue very seriously. This year, we also made arrangements for another delegation to come and look at your experience when it comes to dealing with the legacy of the past as far as human rights violations are concerned, and creating and promoting a culture of respect for human dignity and rights. And again, the visit was very successful. It was led by our Deputy Minister of Human Rights. Iraq is among the very few countries in the region that have a Ministry of Human Rights, and we take this very seriously. If I may link this to the issue of protecting the minorities, the Iraqi constitution has, as like the South African, has clearly stressed the importance of respecting human rights regardless of ethnic, religious or other backgrounds. We see the attacks on, for example, Christians, just like the attacks on other groups in our society. There is nothing special. Unfortunately, those extremist terrorists, they are doing that regardless of your religious or ethnic background. They just want to create chaos. They don't like the democratic transformation. And they know that by stirring sectarian tension or religious tensions, that would help to serve their goals. And that's why they are doing so. In terms of women, thank you for raising the question. I think it's a very important area. Historically, the Iraqi women have always played an active role in Iraq's social, political, economic life. The new constitution and the law that governs the elections in Iraq make it mandatory that the relevant parties have at least one-third of the candidates as women, which will ensure that at least one-quarter of the members of parliament will be women. So currently, out of 325, we have 82 women as members of parliament. The governments, the current and the previous one, have also several members as women, several ministers, deputy ministers. We have many director generals, deputy director generals, and the Iraqi ladies, in terms of education, professional life, are playing an active role in building this new system that we want to build. In terms of looking after those that are more vulnerable, those that don't have husbands, and those that are in charge of looking after orphans, and so on, there are specific privileges and projects that the government has, and the parliament has worked on in order to address those issues. And we will continue with these efforts. In terms of ownership of property, if I understood you correctly, are you referring to local or foreign investors and so on?
Power relations.
Okay. You mean between women and or groups, genders? There are relevant articles and sub-articles in the Constitution that have made it very clear that there shouldn't be any discrimination on the basis of gender. I say this with pride that, for example, in Iraq, we don't discriminate between ladies and women when it comes to pay, for example. Or your chances of getting a job. You won't be discriminated against just because you are a woman. I think that I could testify to this as well. So in terms of having the legal, right legal approach and in terms of the relevant articles in the Constitution and practices, we don't have any major issues there. Obviously, Iraq, like other societies, has some issues that we need to work on, including domestic violence, for example. And this requires a different approach. Just having relevant articles in the Constitution or the laws is not enough. You need, obviously, to work on educating the public and doing some work through NGOs and media and schools and so on. And we are working on that as well. In terms of distribution of resources, let me just give you figures in terms of, the annual budget and how it is distributed. I'm glad to say that our annual budget has increased over the past decades significantly. This year, in 2013, we had one of the largest budgets in the history of Iraq, which was almost similar to your budget that was approved by the Parliament, $116 billion. The forecast for the next year suggests that the annual budget will increase to around $130 billion. That's obviously a very good growth. And the resources are distributed onto different provinces and based on population. We also take into account the level of need. Some provinces have historically suffered more than other provinces, so the Constitution has called for this, and the government, the Parliament, have been working along these lines to try and address some of the historical inequalities that have happened because of the policies and the wars that have affected certain provinces more than other provinces in the past. The same applies to all the other projects that the government has embarked on, for example, creating jobs. Each year within the budget, the Parliament, and then obviously the Cabinet, and then the Parliament will allocate a certain amount to create new jobs. And these jobs will be distributed across the provinces equally, taking into account, obviously, their population and the need. So there is no doubt that one of the positive features of the new system, just like your experience in South Africa, is related to distribution of resources, so that more and more Iraqis, especially those that have historically been disadvantaged or poor or vulnerable, will benefit and have a decent life. Just this week, our cabinet has announced that they will increase the wages of the lower groups, professions and various jobs, to obviously take into account the needs to support them, but also the inflation that has happened. And that is also a clear indication of the commitment of the new system, the Parliament, the government, to distribute resources equally among the Iraqis, which I think is very important.
Thank you very much. I guess most of the issues were clarified, if not all. May we proceed with the list as we started? Shama?
Thank you very much. Thanks, Chairperson, and Thank you much, His Excellency the Ambassador. Most of my questions have been covered in part by some of the responses, but I just want to zoom in onto the issue, Your Excellency, that you raised of the education exchange, which you spoke about, which I believe to be a very important part of, you know, development, particularly if you want to respond to the needs of the job market and, of course, economic growth and development. And so to find out from you to what extent would Iraq be in a position to not only bring students here but to receive South Africans as well on an educational exchange. You cited many instances, in fact, of similarities between our two countries, and of course that might prove to be beneficial. The second point that I want to zoom into is the approach in which your government has taken in terms of youth development, and to say what are the priorities that you are emphasizing and what institutions you've got in place to deal specifically with the challenges which are facing young South Africans, and of course to link that to say what you know, interventions or interactions would your government be prepared to engage in on that level for us to share experiences. And finally, of course, to ask a direct question, very specific, you have raised a number of issues with the committee, and broad ranging from transport to energy and so on, and of course one would be interested to know what you deem to be the key priorities for us here as the Economic Development Portfolio Committee, to say what is it that you'd be expecting, you know, really from us to champion in terms of, you know, the issues that you have raised. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Clemo. Babu Ntuli.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks, His Excellency, the Ambassador. Chairperson, I wanted to check whether the students, after they've graduated, do they have any obligations to the state? If there are any, what are they supposed to do? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. Also, my apology for coming late, started dropping documents in the office. My question is the ownership of primary assets like land. Who owns the land, and what has been the effect of the war that took place? Did that normalize the ownership of land and spread it amongst Iraqis, or has it resulted in part of the land being owned by the international wealth, particularly those that had an interest in the Iraqi war? But secondly, also the oil, who now owns the oil? Can we say the war has resulted in a change of the ownership of the oil wells, etc., to the detriment of Iraqis? And one but last is, I think in South Africa we have a challenge of narrowing the gap between the white people that had most of the wealth of the country, between them and black people. Is that a similar experience in Iraq, where you have poor people having very, very little, and even their salaries, etc., while a few people have got the most benefits? And if it is so, do you have a strategy of addressing it? Do you also have cooperatives as a form of economic activity in Iraq?
Thanks, Comrade Chair.
Thank you, Bob Mabasa. Ma'am, Khorosha? You forgot.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think let me also welcome the presentation and maybe dwell on the issue of disabled people. I just want to check as to whether Iraq is also taking the issue of the disabled very seriously as we in, here in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you. Well, I'm really grateful for the second groups of questions. They would definitely help to enrich the discussion and maybe expand on some of the issues that I didn't have a chance to talk about. In terms of education and students and their commitment, as I said, education is completely free up to postgraduate levels. There are some expectations from the graduates. For example, as a medical doctor who graduated from Baghdad University, we were expected to serve in public government and public and government hospitals for at least the number of years that we studied. So the course is 6 years. We were expected to serve as junior medical doctors for 2 years in various hospitals. After that, we were expected to go and serve in rural communities for a year or two. And then we come back and do what we call the permanency, the residency program. And you might be asked to go to not the places that you would like to work in, but also to other places, obviously taking into account the needs and so on. So that is just one form of giving back to the society. In the past 2 decades, there has been more and more private educational institutions in Iraq. As you know, when you go to a private institution, you pay, so you have more expectations, and you don't expect the other side to have much expectations of you. But so long as the government public institutions are concerned, these are some forms of graduates' commitments and ways of giving back to the society, which I think is important. There has been recently more discussions within the Parliament and the Cabinet how to look after the youth in general and the students in particular. For example, one of the projects that the Parliament has been working on, the Cabinet has approved in principle, is to further support the students whilst they are studying in universities. So not just make the courses free, but also give them some pocket money, something around $100 or so per month to support them whilst they are students. And this was very popular with the students, as you would expect. Generally speaking, one of the differences between our experience and the South African experience, and I think this is important to highlight, because it could also help us to understand why we have been so successful in reducing unemployment in the past few years with all the difficulties we've had, is related to education. Because of the attitudes of the Iraqi families and students, and because of the fact that education is completely free, and we have done historically well, we have a better pool of skilled people, qualified people to employ and to appoint and so on. And that has helped us to reduce unemployment in the way we have done in the past decade. I think there is another area which is important, and this is something we could learn from each other and is relevant to reducing unemployment. We shouldn't just focus on encouraging as many of our students to go to universities and that's it, because there are so many also that might not be interested in going to universities, but they need to be trained and provided with skills that would improve their chances of having decent jobs. So the issue of what we call vocational training is also important. And this is an area that we have done also well in Iraq historically. From high school, mid-high school, we encourage our students to think not just in terms of completing high school and going to universities, but also to think about vocational training as well. And some of them will do so and would be able to have a decent job by the end of high school. And I think this is important. And if we look at the experience of those countries that have done well during the past 5 years in the negative, in this negative financial environment that we found ourselves, those countries that have a good system for vocational training have done better. Germany is one example, and I think I'm told by your deputy of deputy minister of higher education that you have been looking specifically at the experience, German experience, when it comes to this. In terms of the general issue of youth development and institutions, we do have a Ministry of Youth and Sport. They have and the minister is supported by two deputy ministers. One of them is deputy minister for youth, one is for sport. So there is a lot of emphasis on projects and policies that would help youth development and support. We also have a youth parliament in addition to the various organizations that they have, students and so on. Obviously, we need to take into account the fact that the Iraqi society is a relatively young society. 40% of the Iraqis are under the age of 18. So this makes it very important that we invest in this area. Expectations from the portfolio committee. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to summarize my expectations. Obviously, we are grateful for the opportunity to engage with you. We look forward to having future engagements again. I would be grateful for your support when it comes to making it easier for us to engage with the Department of Economic Development. I have sent a special request for His Excellency the Minister to meet him. They have acknowledged that, and we are still waiting to receive an appointment. So maybe if you could also encourage that, we would be grateful. In terms of engaging with your various sectors and other departments, especially the important ones that have been specifically mentioned in the Agreement on Economic and Technical Cooperation, I think that would also be important. And finally, I think we also need your support to raise the profile of moving, the need to move faster and open your embassy in Iraq. I think there is no doubt that this is important. We have been working with our colleagues at DERCO about this. There is a recognition that we need to do so. But so far, things have been rather slow. And if you could do anything also to support this, we would be grateful. In terms of ownership of land and assets and effects of war and who owns the oil fields, let me say very briefly that the American invasion occupation of Iraq did not result in any long-term commitments from the Iraqi side towards the U.S. On the contrary, we obviously look at the invasion and consequences of the invasion in a particular way that reflects the many negative consequences of the invasion occupation and the mistakes that have happened around the time and after the time of occupation. We have, our government has worked hard to prepare the grounds for complete and full withdrawal of the coalition forces, mainly American forces, and that has happened by the end of 2011. So from 2012 onwards, we don't have any American military bases or American military presence in Iraq in any form. In terms of the oil as the important sector, let me give you just one example, which in my view highlights how the new system is behaving in a way to take into account people's interest and the country's interest. In 2009, when we wanted to give the contracts to international companies to develop our oil fields, the companies wanted to do it through partnership, i.e. they come, they invest, they increase our production capacity, and they become our partners in the fields. Some have asked for as many as 40% a share of the fields, which we were not happy with. And we forced them, the government and the Ministry of Oil, have forced those international companies to accept what we call a service deal. You come, you invest, you help us to increase our production capacity, and we give you on average $2 to $6 per extra barrel of oil that you help us to produce. And they were forced to accept this. So as things stand, no international company or other country have ownership of our oil fields. And the world has obviously seen, but also have talked in a very positive way about the Iraqi approach to invest and to encourage investment in the in this important sector, the energy sector. Not only we did not accept a partnership deal, but we forced them to accept a very low price. If you take into account the current price of around $100 per barrel, to pay on average $4 or $5 by extra barrel of oil that we produce is very good. One of the reasons that helped us to do this, because generally speaking, the Iraqi fields have one of the unique features, which is it's easy to get oil out of them. It doesn't cost much. Because of that, we forced them, obviously, to accept it, plus the fact that there was a lot of competition, which helped us to achieve that. There is a new strategy, and if any of you are interested, I could email this to you. There were two important documents as far as the Iraq energy sector is concerned. The International Energy Agency published a very good document in October last year called Iraq Energy Outlook, and it gives you a clear indication of how things are and where things are moving. And generally speaking, the document agrees with our assessment and plans to develop the energy sector, and all the published data suggest that Iraq is heading to becoming, if not the first, the second largest producer exporter of oil. And the second document is an Iraqi document that was published in June. It's called the Strategy for National Energy Development. It's a very also detailed document, over 20 pages, and it's a 20-year plan to develop our energy sector, talking about oil, gas, electricity, and also talking about obviously introducing green technologies, including the use of renewables. And this is an area that I'm very keen that we benefit from your experience and engage with South Africa, because you have done well in this area. So if any of you are interested in getting copies of these, I'll be delighted to share those with you. In terms of strategies to address inequality, as I said, the Constitution has quite a few relevant articles that have highlighted the importance of equality. Historically, we didn't have discrimination on the basis of color, as it happened during the apartheid. But we did have a different kind of discrimination. It was more related to how loyal you are to the previous regime or not. So if you are classified as loyal to the regime, regardless of your background and your qualities and so on, you are likely to be given various privileges and so on. That, because the system continued for nearly 3.5 decades, it did have obviously major impacts on the on various sectors, individuals within the Iraqi society. As things stand, as I said, in various ways, including the way the budget and the annual available annual resources are disputed. The Constitution has made it clear the annual budget, the way it is done, reflects that the resources available to Iraqis are distributed equally among the Iraqis in terms of opportunities for employment, people in different provinces, regardless of their background, sex and so on, have equal access to these opportunities. Obviously, there has been more emphasis on positively discriminating for the benefit of the vulnerable members of the society, and I think this is something you have done here in South Africa as well. The BEE and so on are some examples, but also some of the specific policies to look after those with special needs, women, children, including orphans and so on, and we will continue along these lines. In terms of a committee or strategy for economic activities in Iraq, we have, in addition to the Ministry of Finance, we have also a Ministry of Planning. We don't have a Ministry of Economic Development in the way that you have in South Africa. There are two committees in the Parliament that are relevant to this area. One is the Economic Investment Reconstruction Committee. And one is the Finance Committee, and they work together. Obviously, they supervise the processes when it comes to preparing the budget and distributing resources, but also encouraging economic growth and achieving our very ambitious targets of reducing poverty and employment further to less than 10%. We feel very optimistic, as I said, giving our success in the past few years with all the difficulties we've had, but also giving the forecast for the next decade with the expected growth rates that have been reported. Just to give you one last figure, people have been obviously interested in the Millennium Development Goals, and the MDG1 refers to reducing poverty. We have successfully achieved the MDG1, reduced poverty by over 50% compared to the figures in 1990.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency. I think really the questions raised were elaborated upon, and I think with the first presentation you did manage to give us the global information in terms of what's happening in Iraq. Quite interesting is the growth levels, how you managed to reduce unemployment, the fact that you are continuing to provide free education, and not just that, but also support for further education abroad, and the fact that there are conditionalities, I think, equating to the years spent in studying, I think that's quite encouraging. What I think we also are happy about is the fact that, you know, because oil is the key, I think, a commodity in every, especially for the world across. South Africa is suffering high petrol prices, and that's a serious issue. And as the third producer in the world, I think we are one of the richest, as I indicated in my opening, countries. And to have that kind of cooperation with you, it really helps. And the fact that you're working on the removing the barriers in as far as trade relations on that score with our country, it's quite encouraging. The fact that you managed also to identify common areas and areas that you feel can be enhanced between the two countries also is quite encouraging, because you know, if you understand the problem statement, you are able then to pave a way forward. The fact that there's work in place currently, even though at a slow pace, to us it says there's that kind of recognition that there's something going on. Of course, there are still issues that we learned that South Africans were ready to visit, but because of challenges in Iraq, especially around security, that hence our delegation could not, you know, or proceed. But I think that will continue to be a challenge in as far as South Africans and Iraqis. I needed to make a follow-up to the question. You made mention of Iraqis being killed. You know, you gave us statistics. I wanted to know if there were no foreign, you know, nationalities in that number that you've mentioned, because it's quite important to also understand as to how many people were affected. Maybe the challenge around establishment of an embassy in Iraq could be as a result of that. What I also liked is the fact that you focus now on private sector development. What I did not get from you is how is the government's intervention in small medium enterprise development? I think my colleague did ask a question around cooperative. To us, cooperative is cooperative industry. We are isolating it from SMME because we feel it has a potential of really intervening in terms of assisting our country in growing the economy, but also in dealing with the challenge of unemployment. You really have done well in terms of reducing your unemployment, and I think you were correct, Your Excellency, to equate that, or perhaps to attribute that to the level of education in your country. And this is, you, as you also know, that this is one of the areas where we are challenged as the country. And of course, this is because of our past history and the country's working on. Maybe if, as part of the documents that you'd want to share with us, is how exactly have you managed to deal with your poverty issues? I mean, to move your poverty levels from where they were to where they are now, I think it's quite interesting for us and encouraging for us that at least, even though, you know, the steep is quite it's quite steep, but we feel that we could also do something with, of course, cooperations with countries like yourselves. So I thought I should just raise those few issues, we've heard the areas of concern that you have, and where you want us, for instance, to assist as this team. We will try, but as you know, that we are also approaching elections. But does this team, up to the point where we leave for electioneering, we will try our best to ensure that the process is moved a bit faster, so that you can be able to realize, you know, the fruits of this relationship that we have between the two countries. I'm not sure whether you're going to be responding, but let me, from my side, because I want to leave it with you, really appreciate the fact that you've initiated this visit, and you saw it important that you brief us as this team, and as the team economic development, we feel with the information that you brought to us, you've really enriched us. We are going to be interacting much more wiser than, you know, we were before we interacted with you. We understand now what's going on in that country. That's apart from what we hear from the media. Thank you very much for this, and I would want to wish you all the best in your work. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you also to the Honourable Members of the Committee. Let me very briefly answer the two, three questions that you briefly touched upon. In terms of attacks on foreigners in the past few years, there hasn't been any major episodes or accidents as far as attacks on foreign diplomats or missions or visitors and so on. Unfortunately, most of the attacks were on Iraqis and innocent Iraqis. In terms of small, medium and micro enterprises and so on, as part of the strategy to encourage the growth of private sector, the government is looking at this with great importance. Let me briefly tell you about some of the tools that the government has been trying to use. We have a national investment law that governs the process of local or foreign investment in Iraq. It has given quite a few privileges to local or foreign investors to encourage investment. One of them is a low is exemption from paying any taxes on any profits made in the first 10 years. If you invest a minimum of $250,000, something around 2.5-3 million rand, you will get all the above, all the privileges mentioned. So 10 years exemption from paying any taxes, 3 years exemption from paying any customs and duties on equipment you need to bring into the country to implement your project. You are forced to employ at least 50% of the Iraqis in implementing your project. So you are free to bring your own staff from abroad, but up to 50%. You have to use 50% of the local labor. The law also encourages partnership with the private sector in Iraq, and that in itself has many advantages, including obviously support with the logistics, knowledge of the system, and so on. If the project requires a piece of land, you will get the piece of land almost for free. So you could use it for 25, 50 years, and that could be renewed based on the project. If you continue beyond the first 10 years and your project is successful, you are expected to pay a low tax rate of only 15%. So these are some of the tools we have been using to encourage more growth of the private sector. In terms of the strategy to reduce poverty and unemployment, if you are interested, I'll see whether I could share with you a translated copy in English of our new strategy to be implemented over the next 5 years of reducing poverty in Iraq. I think probably that would be a good document to look at, and I'm sure there will be interested areas there to look at and to learn from the experience in Iraq. Finally, I have two things to do. One is to share with you a small gift that I would hope will help you and the members of the committee to think about Iraq. To think about the Iraqi contribution towards human civilizations. As I said, it's not without basis. They say Iraq was the cradle of all civilizations. So these are some of the important symbols of all civilizations. You are all familiar with the Babylonian civilization. So this is a Babylonian line. Obviously, at that time, the line was a sign of power and strength. We have, from the old civilization, we also have the Zakurat of Ur, one of the very mysterious buildings. According to the professor who is the head of ancient cities at Stellenbosch, he thinks that our Zakuret of Ur is more interesting than the Egyptian pyramids. And he's waiting for an opportunity to go and visit the minaret, the Zakuret. This is Ur, obviously one of the older civilizations in the southern part of Iraq. The bull wing bull is again the bull, as we know, is a sign of strength, but with a human head, indicating the combination of wisdom and power, a symbol of the Ashurian civilizations in the northern part of Iraq, nearly 3,000-4,000 years ago. During the Islamic era, we have the minaret of the great mosque in Samarra, which is north of Baghdad. It's 12 centuries old. It is there, actually. You could go to the top, and you get a nice view of the city of Samarra. Ishtar Gate is famous for the Babylonian civilization, and this is a map of Iraq. There is rarely a place in Iraq that doesn't have an importantly, historically or religiously important site. So I do hope you would have an opportunity sometime in the future to go and visit and enjoy seeing some of these important icons of all civilizations. So, Honorable Chairperson, I take this opportunity to thank you also again for providing us with this opportunity to meet with you, to update you. And I would like also to suggest that we have a group photo so that we remember all of you. Thank you again. I enjoy everything.